The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 33. West Virginia was the first state to observe Mother's Day. Yay! And the first state to institute sales tax. Boo! Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. And today we've got a really neat interview with Ryan Warner that touches on two distinct areas that Ryan is an expert in. The first is how to get a really cool job in the travel industry. One that if I wasn't fortunate enough to be running Extra Pack of Peanuts full time, I'd definitely be jumping all over. And the best part about this is that Ryan's specific field in the travel industry is actually pretty easy to get into right now. Believe it or not, it's a newer field and the industry is looking for people. So if you're someone who wants the stability of a quote unquote regular job, but also enjoys being around travel and getting to travel yourself, this could be an awesome opportunity. And Ryan's going to tell you about how he got his job in this industry and also how you can go about doing the same. The second part of the interview delves into study abroad and all the opportunities out there for students who want to study abroad. If you are a college student, there's tons of information about programs and scholarships, including one that gives out $6,000 to almost everyone who applies for it. So you need to listen to this. We're talking about free money here, folks. And if you're not a college student, I urge you to have a listen and pass this information along to anyone you know who might want to study abroad, whether that be a son, daughter, grandkid, brother, sister, even just a friend. So there you have it. In 45 minutes, Ryan is going to tell you how to land a dream travel job and also how to get tons of money for free to study abroad. You can't beat that. Before we get into the interview, though, guys, I'm very excited to announce that we have just opened up registration for the fourth session of Frequent Flyer Bootcamp. And if you haven't heard about Frequent Flyer Bootcamp before, it is our flagship course here at Extra Pack of Peanuts and something I've personally spent hundreds of hours putting together and I'm very, very proud of. It is designed for people who have decided it's time for them to get serious about frequent flyer miles and who really want to start traveling the world for free. So if you're sitting there thinking, I get so frustrated when I try to use my frequent flyer miles or points, I can never seem to book the trips that I want, or you're thinking, how the heck can Travis take so many awesome trips for so little? Well, here are all the answers. The course is a month long, but allows you to work at your own pace and has three main features. The first feature is 15 high-definition professional video tutorials that walk you through step-by-step how to do everything in regards to frequent flyer miles, from how and when to open and close credit cards, to how to find availability for tickets using miles, to even how to add free one-way tickets onto flights so you can take more vacations for even less miles. In addition, you'll also receive multiple spreadsheets and charts of all the intricacies of frequent flyer miles, such as which airlines to avoid booking with and stuff like that. Second main part is the live weekly question and answer conference calls with me and the rest of the frequent flyer bootcampers so that you can ask any question that you have and you can get an answer immediately live. I can't stress how important this is. And also, if you can't make the conference call, it is recorded and then sent out to you the next day. So you're always getting instant access to an expert to get any of the questions you have as you're going through the bootcamp answered right away. The third main feature is an incredibly active private Facebook group for Frequent Flyer Bootcamp members only, where we each share tips and tricks that we've learned with each other. The best part about this is that you're a member for life, so when the month is over and the videos stop coming, whether you have a question now or a year from now, you are still a member of Bootcamp. You can continue to get your questions answered immediately by me and by the other experts of Frequent Flyer Bootcamp. I cannot tell you how proud I am of the first few sessions of bootcamp. We've had over 40 students go through and already they've booked crazy tickets such as a family of five going literally around the world for less than $80 each, $5 flights to Hawaii, 2-month honeymoons to Thailand and Bali for under $100, and all types of other awesome trips. And that's the best thing about Bootcamp, that we are actually booking real tickets to real places that you specifically want to go. So at the end of Bootcamp, you know that you'll be going to wherever your dream destination is, whether it's Hawaii, whether it's Bali, whether you want to go around the world. We're going to help you book those tickets to those dream destinations during Bootcamp. So it's real actionable stuff that we're doing. Of course, I should also mention that the course comes with a 100% guarantee. If you don't learn enough to book over $500 of free airfare, and just to let you know, it's going to be way more than $500 of free airfare that you're going to learn how to book, but I will gladly refund your money, no questions asked. If you're interested in signing up, I would urge you head on over to extrapackofpeanuts.com/frequent flyer bootcamp. Hurry up though. Registration is only open for 4 days and we purposefully cap it at 30 people to keep it very small with no exceptions. So if you do want more info and you do want to sign up, head on over extrapackofpeanuts.com/frequent flyer bootcamp. I look forward to whipping some of you into frequent flyer shape. And now let's jump into this great interview. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is a loyal Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast listener and someone with one of the coolest regular travel jobs out there, Ryan Warner, the coordinator of study abroad and global engagement for Marshall University. Ryan, thanks so much for coming on the show and welcome.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, just a little backstory for listeners. Ryan shot me an email a few days ago just telling me how much he loved the show and a bit about his background and what he does. And I immediately thought this would make an awesome podcast episode. And I asked him if he'd be nice enough to join us. And here we are. And the reason I knew Ryan would make such a great guest is because there are really two main subjects that he's going to give us some awesome knowledge on. One, how people who are looking to have a career in travel or a travel-based industry can get a similar position like the one he has at Marshall. And then two, the many, many opportunities that are open to students who wish to study abroad and how they can best go about doing it. So for people who are out of college, already have a career and are looking to get into travel, Ryan's got you covered. And then people who are in college and listening to this and really want to do some study abroad, or maybe you're on the fence, Ryan's got you covered there. So Ryan, let's start with the first part. Can you tell people about your job and what it is that you kind of do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am in the field of international education, specifically education abroad is my subfield. You know, I got into this field by studying abroad myself. I studied abroad back in 2008, spring 2008 it was, through Shawnee State University, and I went over to Spain to study Spanish and business economics. It's really interesting how I fell into this field, because most people don't just land here and have an idea, oh, I'm going to go into education abroad. A lot of people don't even know this field exists, but it's a pretty sweet area to get into because it does provide support for you financially and a good life, and you still get to travel. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. So in 2008, I studied abroad in Spain, and it was by far the best experience I ever had in college. Very rarely do I ever have any study abroad students come back and say, well, that was a bad experience. They totally love it. And so I came back in the May of 2008 and was like, man, how do I really capitalize on what I just did? It was the best experience I had. So I got the idea, I'm going to go to my study abroad office on campus. And if most listeners don't know, almost every single university or college in America has an international office. You just don't know it's there or who leads it or directs it. So I went to the office and I was like, hey, you know, I just got back from studying abroad and I'm really interested in just being around international students and more study abroad students. How can I help? I'll print posters, put them up. I don't care. I'll work for free. And they're like, hey, you know, actually, we could use you. So I worked there for the entire summer of 2008. And in August 2008 it was, I got an offer to go back to Asia, to China, and do a study trip there with a group to help with taking a group abroad. So I did that. And I came back, and once I kind of had the travel bug, I was like, okay, now I know what I want to do. I see other people around me working in the study abroad office. This is where I want to be. Then I went on to Marshall University, where I'm currently working. It's been a long story here, and it's worked out really well for me. And I was like, I'm going to go find the international office. So I showed up on their front doorstep and I was like, hey, anything open? I studied abroad. What can I do to help you? And they're like, well, we have a graduate assistant position open here at Marshall in the international office. So we'll pay your tuition and you can work for us. And I was like, by all means, you know, sure. And one thing led to another. And before I knew it, I worked here for about 2 years helping international students with their immigration, which is in the field of international student services. In this field, there's two sides, international student services and education abroad. I'm now in education abroad. At that time, right when I was graduating, the study abroad coordinator took another position elsewhere. So I applied for this position and landed it. It has just been an awesome, awesome ride because now I get to help students study abroad, what I did, and I also get paid to do it and get to travel as well on the business side of things. So it's an awesome field to get into.
Yeah. So then what is your day-to-day job kind of like? You know, if you could describe a typical day, and I'm sure nothing is typical when it comes to, you know, international students, there's always crazy stuff coming up, but what are some of the responsibilities and roles that you have?
Well, I really carry two roles. One is helping students that are here at Marshall choose study abroad locations, facilitating the entire process of how to study abroad, how to do it at a low cost, and have, you know, one of the best experiences of your college career. And then the other side is I build university partner relationships, which is also another interesting aspect probably later on to talk about. And that's basically most universities in the U.S., they have what they call a sister institution abroad. So you can study at that institution paying the same tuition at your home university and spend the semester at that institution. For me, it was in Spain. I facilitate those partnerships, and that's where kind of I get into the travel aspect. I get to go to different universities, visit with our staff, convince them that Marshall is an awesome university to join, and we'll send them students to study abroad at their university. So those are really the two aspects of my field and what I do.
And what are a few of the places then in the last year or two that you've been able to get to travel to meet up with those, you know, try to gain partner universities or go and visit partner universities? Because you told me you've been to some pretty cool places.
Yeah. So in the past 2 years alone, I did one trip 2 years ago over the summer to Spain, France, and England, where we do have sister institutions in each one of those countries. Got to work with their staff over there to improve the number of students we send abroad to their school, and we accept their students as well. So that was one trip, and let's see, I just recently got back last week from Japan and Korea, meeting with institutions over there. So I've traveled for my end, partner institutions to those countries. And then last year, I started doing some international student recruitment fairs. So the Marshall was like, hey, we know that you speak Spanish and you've traveled a lot, so you're probably a good candidate for this. We need you to go to France, Brazil, Colombia, Ecuador, and Brazil actually twice within about a 4 month span to do student recruitment.
Wow.
So it was an awesome gig. Yeah.
That's really cool. And then how often would you say that you're traveling? Like, you know, if you could put it in percentage or what have you, I'm sure it's always changing. How often are you traveling? How often are you back at Marshall?
It's really probably only about 10% travel in my position, which works out well, especially for someone who maybe is tied to a house they own or they have a family or whatever it may be. But they're like, you know, my family loves to travel. It's just not convenient to be traveling all the time. About 10% of what I do is just travel. So that equates to maybe, you know, two-week trips during the year that I travel and do business work on the university's expenditures. So it works out really well. And then the rest of that time is definitely just firsthand working with the students. I kind of consider myself like an awesome travel agent, you know, working with college students, convincing them where they should go, how it's going to fit them academically. That's important to note. If you're a music major, it's a good idea to go to Austria or whatever it may be, you know. So it's a good mix of working firsthand with students and a little bit of travel.
Yeah. And I mentioned in the beginning, you know, a quote unquote regular job, because a lot of people who come on the podcast or are looking, you know, for jobs and travel, they want a regular job. Like, hey, I'm going to have a home. I'm going to live here. I'm going to have a home base. But I like for travel to be a part of that. I don't necessarily want to be nomadic. I don't want to start my own company. I don't want to do any of that. I want a regular job, but I want it to be around travel. And that's kind of, you know, like you said, the perfect mixing point here for you. You get to travel on the university's dime at times, and the other part, you're actually convincing people to travel or being around travel as well. And that's why I think it's a pretty, pretty awesome job that you have. I guess you would agree with that, huh?
Yeah, it works out perfectly. And the field of education abroad is quite new. We have only been a study abroad office here for probably around 10 years. So that's pretty new. There are a lot of jobs out there in this field for anyone who's listening that is wanting to get into this field. So many jobs to really fit you, whether it be a director of an office or starting out as an advisor like I did and then getting promoted. There's a few different places where people can go to look for getting into higher education, which is what we're in, NAFSA.org. That's kind of the monster of all organizations for this field. They host an annual conference every single year and also regional conferences. So I have a partner that I work with that she just went to Indianapolis to the regional conference back in the fall and landed a bunch of job prospects, networking. And so I guarantee when she graduates this May, she's going to land a job somewhere. And then also another one is the Education Abroad Forum. It's called forumea.org. And that is another great resource for looking for jobs. They're always posting jobs for study abroad on there weekly. Tons of resources out there for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, and that's the important thing, I think, too, is so many people want to get into the travel industry, but it's very hard. You know, you think of, I want to be a travel agent, I want to do this, or I want to be a travel writer. And it's, you know, there's a lot of obstacles to get into it. But here's a job that might even be better than that, and yet has less obstacles, or it seems like it has less obstacles because it is a new field. If you're creative, if you're innovative like you are, you can find your way into a position. And like you did, you know, you just went knocking on doors, basically.
Exactly. That's what's really cool about this field is most people don't go get a degree and study abroad. Okay. You graduate with a degree in art, business, whatever it may be. And then you're like, what am I going to do with my life? As long as you have traveled abroad a little bit or have some sort of international experience, you're well-rounded as a person, open-minded, you really learn what this field is about after you get the job, okay? So if you go to some sort of interview for one of these jobs, they're going to just ask you, what have you done abroad? You know, what did you study in college? Okay, cool. But what international experience you have? If you can sell yourself, I studied abroad or I've traveled abroad, That's your foot in the door right there for sure. So,
yeah, it's more about experiences than qualifications because really, I guess there aren't too many qualifications. Like you said, yeah, I mean, maybe someone could get a degree in education that might help. But really, it sounds like you're saying it's about selling yourself and it's about kind of putting yourself out there.
Yeah, exactly. So when you look at a lot of the qualifications for these jobs, you'll see it says good with, you know, Excel and Word and networking and Twitter, because our field is really big on just getting the word of study abroad out there. That's half of the job, is just getting the student in. And then you can advise the student on, you know, how are you going to work academically with your courses abroad and financial aid or whatever it may be. And that just kind of comes with experience. So no one expects you to know that, because every university handles academics and financial aid differently. So you got to kind of learn the ropes of that university. But for my field, also what's really nice, and this is important to mention to people listening, is when you get into the university system of higher education, you're also getting, you know, insurance and a salary and things like that. And that is really important when you're looking for a professional career. And that all comes with the package of working and study abroad.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to get into that a little bit. So you've mentioned some awesome resources. We'll link them in the show notes of where people can start looking for jobs. And, you know, I'm sure there's job descriptions that are going to be out there that are pretty standard. And you think, well, I don't know how to do this or whatever. But like you said, you're telling us it really is. If you're personable and you're decent at networking, it's almost like a marketing job at first. Get them in the door and you can learn the ropes after that. what then are some of the logistics, if you don't mind sharing, of certain jobs? So if someone wants to get in this field and they're starting to look at jobs, in terms of salary, benefits, workload, like does it ebb and flow throughout the year? What can someone expect after they land a job, or should they expect before they, you know, go looking for it?
Well, as far as this position goes, once you land the job, or well, I should start with saying when you're looking for a job, most of these jobs are going to start out entry level, and it'll state that on the job opening, entry level study abroad or education abroad position, which is where I started. And it doesn't take long to move up. And most of those jobs start around, I'd say, $30,000 to $35,000 a year in regards to salary. And most universities, like I said, private or public, they are going to give you a benefit package that comes with that. So when they're looking for that job, just, you know, look for the entry level job. When you start getting into director level jobs, you're going to see a lot of the job requirements being 2 to 3 years of experience in this field, but you can gain that pretty quickly. So definitely that it's not hard to get into this field, and it's super rewarding.
Yeah. And then as far as the workload, is it like during the summer, are you working more? Are you working less? Or when kids are in school, is it like, you know, gung-ho? Or is it kind of a 9-to-5 regular type situation?
It's really cool because, you know, I'm sure a lot of the listeners have been in college, and you know that, you know, no hack on faculty, but they have super awesome hours to teach a class, have a couple office hours, and then go home wherever they go. Higher education is very flexible. And so that's what's nice about my position. My daily workload, generally, my office hours are from 8:30 to 4:30. That's when I'm expected to be at work. I go home and check emails and things like that. Most of my hours are spent just sitting down and advising students, which is so cool because I get to talk about different countries and cultures and where I think it's kind of like matching a puzzle together, what's going to work out for them. The semesters are usually pretty busy. When the kids are on campus, it's busy. The traffic in my office is pretty high. And then summer just kind of tanks off. And that's when you get to do a lot of your travel during the summer when the traffic is pretty slow with students. So it works out really well. And that works out well. My wife is a teacher. So in the summer when I'm traveling, she's not teaching. She gets to hop on board and go to a lot of these places with me.
Very, very cool. And I'm assuming that most people then who get into this field, obviously they like travel and stuff like that. What type of vacation time are you given? Is it a 2-week thing, or is it more flexible than that?
I get a lot of vacation. That's higher education. I think I have like 30 days vacation, and you usually, when you get into entry level job, you start off with maybe 2 weeks vacation, and then within a year, you're up to like 2 months vacation. Or at least a whole month vacation. The vacation package is really nice. Sick days, those are all included. People are going to really find this to be a suitable lifestyle for having a family or spouses, whatever it may be, and still being around travel and getting to travel a little bit each and every year.
Yeah, overall, a pretty sweet gig, right?
I would be lying if I said anything different than what you just said. Yeah.
And last question, kind of in terms of the actual job, how many people then are usually in a college study abroad office? Because a lot of people, you know, like we said, don't even know where the study abroad office is or the international student office. And you're saying, you know, there's a decent amount of jobs out there. If they went back to their university, how many different people would kind of be working in this sector?
Well, every university is kind of different, so it really depends on the size of the university. Here at Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia, we're a pretty small program. I'm the only full-time employed person in the Office of Study Abroad. I do have one assistant, a graduate assistant. Somewhere, for example, Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio, they have a huge program. I think they employ like 15 people in their Office of Study Abroad. But let's put it in perspective. Here at Marshall, I send about 200 university students abroad annually. Ohio State sends 2,400 students abroad annually. So it really just depends on the size of the university. Both of them, they work the same. We do the same exact thing. It's just the capacity of how many students we're sending abroad, really. So here, small colleges, I would say 2 to 4 people in a study abroad office. Big ones, big universities, 15 to 20 employed people.
Yeah, and you mentioned something cool there and how you got your start too. If you are a college student and you're looking for a graduate assistantship or something like that, that might be another route to go is, you know, you don't need a full-time job. You need a graduate assistantship, maybe head your study abroad office. And if that's something you then want to do in the future, like Ryan did, that's going to set you up because all of a sudden you have experience that very few people out there already have.
Exactly. So if this is a field you're wanting to get into, just go knock on the door. See how you can help. Most campuses have international students. So I was like, hey, can I help when it's dorm arrival time and international students are coming in? I'll take them to Walmart, whatever it takes. You know, I love meeting new people. That's what I did. And it has turned into now 5 years in this field. And it's awesome. I mean, no other word to describe it.
Nice. Ryan, great stuff with that. And if I wasn't lucky enough to be able to run Extra Pack of Peanuts full time, I'd be looking to become a colleague of yours. So maybe down the road. What a neat career. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the other side of the coin. That is for students who want to study abroad. So if someone comes into your office, I'm sure it happens all the time, someone comes into your office and they're considering studying abroad, what are some of the things that you tell them either about why they should or things they should consider if they're on the fence or they just don't know if they're going to do it or not?
Yeah, most students who come in my office don't have a clue where they want to go, how they're going to apply it to what they're studying.
Typical college students.
Yeah, so it's really just starting with a blank slate in front of me. And that's what I really like. Because like I said earlier, it's like putting a puzzle together. And that's the fun part of it. But when a student comes into my office and they're like, well, I've thought about studying abroad. I've heard about it. I don't know anything about it. What they ask me, why should I study abroad? First and foremost, job marketability, hands down. We're in a globalized world now, and it's moving faster than ever. And coming back, being able to say, hey, I studied my degree overseas for 5 months or 1 year, totally sets you above and beyond the other candidates that may be applying against you in a position. That right there usually hooks students. They're like, oh, wow, you know, that's true. You know, why am I studying international business at my university and I've never even been abroad? You know, so job marketability first. Second language learning, being able to speak a second language proficiently, it's huge. And most of these study abroad programs will allow you to study your courses in English abroad and then be able to study a second language on the side. So there's always some sort of second language learning program attached to the study abroad program you're going to do. And then low cost. I mean, study abroad, there are so many myths about study abroad, but you can almost study abroad for the exact same cost you would pay for one semester at your university. And finally, for me, connections. You make so many friends and connections that become lifelong friends, and you know, that's also comes into traveling low cost. You have connections around the world. You know, you don't have to pay for room and board whenever you travel abroad. So why not?
Yeah. Three really cool points in there. One, the connections thing I will totally agree with. You know, I went to Japan to teach English for that reason. A, I wanted to travel myself, but B, I said the people I'm going to meet here, I'm going to be lifelong friends with, and they live all over the world, and now I can go visit them. So we've been to Australia, we've been to London, we've been to Singapore, you know, all these places, and there you go. No room and board, you stay with friends, you get to meet them. It's an excuse, basically, to travel somewhere, which none of us really need too many excuses, but it's nice. And I totally agree, again, with putting you ahead of all the other applicants. It's going to be something that sticks out. I know when I came back from doing my internship in Switzerland, and then I was looking for teaching jobs again, every single interview I went into, all anyone wanted to talk about was what I did in Switzerland. And it was awesome because they, you know, it's interesting to them. They're like, you work for the International Baseball Federation. What is that? I told them what I did. And immediately it was like regaling them with stories. It wasn't even an interview. It was like I was on this, you know, podium and like, hey, tell your travel stories. And so it sets you at ease, sets them at ease, and they remember you. So definitely memorable with that. And we're going to hit on the cost of studying abroad a little later. But yeah, my one main regret was not studying abroad for the simple fact that my sister studied abroad in Australia, and she paid the same amount as I did for a semester at the school that I was at. And I thought, after that happened, I was like, what am I doing wrong here? So,
yes, study abroad honestly maximizes your college experience and your college education. So, you know, and there's some 2,000 universities in the U.S., and almost every single one of them have a study abroad program. And we're struggling to maximize how many students we get to go abroad. It's an amazing experience. It's an excellent opportunity that most students don't even know about.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think most people have heard about it, but they don't really get the gist of it. And that kind of leads me into the next thing then of logistically, how does the study abroad process work? Like we said, most people probably have heard of study abroad, but then they don't know the details behind it. So a few of the questions I think a lot of people would have would be, you know, how far in advance do you have to apply to go study abroad? Can you go almost anywhere? Is it always through your own university, or can you go in like these groups of cohorts with students from other universities? How about all that kind of those general question things?
Well, that perfect. Most study abroad processes take about 6 to 8 months to put it all together if you're going to be spending in a semester abroad. You've got the application process, which is usually pretty easy. It's just your regular general information, get a faculty recommendation of why you should go abroad. And then you have to get a visa, you know, those kinds of things. Depending on where you're going, you may have to get a visa. But that's just a long kind of process that's built into...
Right. It's not too much extra. It's not hard, I guess we should say.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not a difficult process at all. Just kind of lengthy, really. And, you know, you submit your application and then like 2 months later, you hear that you're accepted. It takes a little bit of time to hear back from the university. So it's not something you're working on every single day to make happen. You basically just tell your director what you want to do, where you want to go, and you let us do the work and put it together for you is pretty much how it works. Once you go abroad, we actually build everything before you go. So let's say you're a business major. I know there's a lot of business majors, so I always use that as an example. If you're a business major, we always pre-approve your credits before you go. So you know what you're going to be studying when you're abroad and how they're going to transfer back. You know, not to dive into too many myths, but one of the myths about study abroad is I'm going to get behind in graduation. We actually here at Marshall and most of my colleagues at other universities, we pre-approve your credits. So you know what you're going to take and you know how they're going to transfer before you get back. So there's a pre-approval credit process that you'll do. And then you'll work out with your financial aid. If you get financial aid, some students are getting scholarships, whatever it may be. And the nice thing about that is most universities, like I said, have sister institutions or international exchange programs. And what that means is you pay everything to your home university and then spend that semester or year abroad at that university. And you don't pay that school anything extra. Okay. And by doing that, all your financial aid, all your scholarships, grants, whatever it may be, all carry with you. That's where the low cost comes in.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. It's pretty straightforward because your university is basically going to handle everything. You just handle going to the actual place and then studying. But the credits, like you said, the credits, the financial aid, everything goes through your home university first.
Exactly, exactly.
What about then deciding where you can go or where you should go? Can people go almost anywhere, or is there, you know, certain restrictions, things like that?
Some countries and some programs require that you have maybe, let's say you're going to go to a program where most of the courses are taught in Spanish, then they may require you to have a couple semesters of that language prior to arriving at the program. But most programs are taught all in English, and then you have a sub program for second language learning. Here at Marshall, we have our sister institutions, which are about 7 of them around the world. And then we're partnered with a program called ISEP, internationalstudentexchangeprogram.org. And there's a lot of universities in the U.S. that are partnered in this program. So if you're a college student listening to this, check out if your university is an ISEP member, because they are a network of 250 universities around the world in 50 different countries where you can study abroad. If your university's in that network, you can study at any of those universities in 50 different countries around the world and pay your home tuition, fees, room and board straight to your home university and spend the semester at that institution in another country and not pay anything to them.
Wow. Wow. So, all right, you've got two kind of different things here. You've got whatever sister universities or partner universities that your university is partnered up with, to use that term. And then you have the ISEP, which, yeah. And then if you do ISEP, I assume, you know, you're going to be going to a university abroad, but there's also going to be lots of students from other American universities or maybe even, you know, British universities and stuff like that all coming together there.
Exactly. Yes. So, you know, you may go to the University of Ulster in Northern Ireland, and there's going to be a student maybe from the University of Florida or University of Texas. Not a lot of them, though. You're not going to get there and find this big American community of students. It's not like that. There will be, though, the cool part is there's going to be other exchange students from all over the world there. So you instantly meet people from day one. They have orientation week. You're going to meet all these students that are there doing exactly what you're doing. To answer, also go back and answer your question, you can pretty much find a program in any country where you want to go. If we don't have something, we can find it for you. And another perk about it is, say, you know, a student from Marshall's like, you don't really have something. I really have my heart set on going to Thailand, but you guys don't have anything. Well, can I go to a university down the road, join up with them and go on a program and still bring my credit back to my home institution? Absolutely. You can do that.
Wow. Very cool. Yeah. So, all right. The world is more or less your oyster when you're looking to study abroad.
Exactly.
What about, and you kind of touched on it a little bit by saying there is an orientation, but what do you tell the students who are like, yeah, I really do want to study abroad. I know it's for me, but I'm scared. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are like that. Maybe they haven't traveled abroad before. I know when I was in university, I'd never gone internationally other than Canada. So I would have been a student coming to you saying, hey, this is really cool, but I've never even gone abroad before. What do you tell them to assuage their fears? And, you know, how does that work out?
What I personally use is my own personal experience when I talk to the students. And that's really the best medicine for any sort of nervousness or anxiety a student may have. And that's when you're getting into this field, they want to know, have you done this? You know, can you explain to students what's going on? So for a student who might be like, this is a cool idea, but I am just totally afraid of spending 5 months away from my family, my friends, my university. Don't worry. It's okay. Everybody, you know, when I went to Spain, I had never, ever left the U.S. before, moved in with a Spanish family that I didn't know, and just rolled with it. And yes, you do get homesick those first couple weeks. It's natural. It's normal. You're out of your element and your regular environment. What I tell students is you're going to immediately start making friends, and you're going to start worrying about everything that was happening back in your regular life, and you're going to start learning, you know, wow, there is more out there in the world than just my little cube where I live, my box back at home. And that usually they're like, okay, that's true. You know, that. So, and then I just tell them about the benefits. I'm like, hey, you know, what's really nice is they offer a lot of open weekends for students. You're going to be a regular college student. What's nice about going to Europe? Getting on the train and being able to go to wherever you want. I'm like, so if you're studying in London, hey, hit the train from King's Cross Station down to Paris. It's a 2-hour train ride. And they're like, wow, I can do that. So I just start chalking out all these opportunities that are going to open up to them when they do study abroad.
Yeah, that's awesome. And one of the things that I was just thinking of when you were saying that is most people go through that homesickness and that kind of feeling in the first 3 weeks of college anyway. Like when they first come in as a freshman, you have that instant excitement followed by, okay, this is real life, followed by, oh, what are all my friends doing? I used to know. What about my family? How do I do laundry? You know, whatever, all these questions. And then it works out, right? And I assume it's a similar type thing when you go abroad. It's just that you're a few years older.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. And, you know, a lot of students are also concerned about the language barrier. You know, I've worked just recently with a couple of students who wanted to go to Europe. And I was like, they're like, where should I go? And I said, well, why not Finland? You're a biology major. They're number one in the world in sciences. Go there. And they're like, well, we don't speak Finnish. And I was like, well, most of them do speak English there. And all the courses are in English. We're a globalized world. Almost everybody speaks English anywhere you go. And they're like, okay, cool. And it turned out to be one of the coolest experiences for them.
Yeah. And I think that's important that your courses will be in English, or you'll know ahead of time if they will or if they won't. And especially going to Europe, you'll find that everyone is going to be speaking English with you, especially the people that you're going to be interacting with on a day-to-day basis. And what are then some of the myths? We've hit a little bit of them. One of them is a language barrier. What are some of the myths about studying abroad, the misconceptions you hear about, and then kind of the reality behind those myths?
First and foremost, biggest myth, as we all probably could assume, is the cost. Most students are like, yeah, I'd love to do this, but I've heard this is really expensive. And then I respond to them, well, who'd you hear that from? Because that's not true. When you pay everything to your home institution to spend a semester abroad, It's a balance. It's right at the same cost that you're going to pay. Now, you may have your airfare. You may have a deposit on your room wherever you're staying that you're going to get back when you leave. Right now, the federal government is giving out so much scholarship money for students to go abroad because they want more college graduates graduating college with international experiences. The money is it's incredible. So first and foremost, I usually push students towards what's called the Gilman Award. It's for students who have low income and are Pell Grant recipients. That scholarship is worth $5,000 to go abroad. Now, typically that scholarship is geared towards students that are going to what the U.S. government considers critically needed areas of study abroad. And sorry, folks, Europe doesn't fall in that realm. We're talking about Africa, Asia, and Latin America. So if you are a student that's receiving the Pell Grant, you're going to go to Asia or Africa, Latin America to spend a semester or a year abroad. And in your essay, pretty much sell yourself of why this is going to match your academic degree where you're back at your home institution. It's kind of like a shoe-in to $5,000 that is direct deposited into your account with no strings attached. They do require you to do a service project when you get back. That may be going to classrooms and sharing your experience with students, promoting study abroad, or even going, I've had students go back to their high school and say, hey, if you go to college, you can travel and do this and receive the scholarship. So that's kind of the big one that most universities are locked into is the Gilman Award. And then they also offer the critically needed scholarship. So if you're going to study Mandarin or Thai, whatever it may be, the Japanese is another big one that the federal government considers critically needed languages to the U.S., you can get an additional $3,000. So I had a student last year get $8,000 to study abroad. So he came back with extra money because he paid everything to his school. He had scholarships that covered his tuition, and then he got an $8,000 scholarship. So that's a big one. So the cost can be minimized. That's the bottom line. The cost can be minimized. And if you just work with your office, we'll find a way to make it happen for you financially. Another big myth is being delayed in graduation. Students think, if I go a semester abroad, then I'm losing a semester of time back at my school, and my parents who are paying for this are totally not going to fly for that. If you work closely with your director or your study abroad advisor, again, everything is pre-approved. If you're a psychology major, we're going to actually pick out your courses for you abroad. This is what you're going to take. Our admissions and registrar's office say, okay, we pre-approve all these credits. When you get back, this is what you're going to receive when you return. You're going to stay right on track. That is one of probably the biggest myth about studying abroad is getting behind in graduation. If you work closely, that won't happen.
Yeah, and I guess you can speak from your own experience. I can speak from my sister's experience. She did a semester abroad in Australia, and it, you know, lined up. I think it was 15 credits or 18 credits. You know, it was bog standard amount of credits, and she graduated in 4 years, just like I did, except she got to go to Australia, and I was sitting home in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Again, if there was ever a time to really consider going back to the cost of spending a little bit of money in college, if you've gotten through college without any loans, I'm totally against taking out loans if at all possible. But again, the job marketability of going, I also consider an investment into yourself. If you need to take out a loan to cover your airfare, that's the only thing keeping you back, then I would recommend doing that because the investment in getting a job when you get back is high investment.
Right. A great return on investment if you consider $1,000 or $1,500 for airfare, and yet you're going to have A, amazing experiences, and then B, like you said, become more marketable in the long run anyway. And you told people about some of the opportunities, the Gilman Award. Is there other places that people should look, either inside, I guess, or outside of their own university for money or opportunities to study abroad?
Yeah, so there's some private places that offer scholarship money, like the Boren Award. They offer up to $20,000 in scholarship money per student if you're studying, again, in a critically needed area, Asia, Africa, Latin America. A good resource that I use, and I'll give this guy a plug, is Nate Nault from thestudyabroadblog.com. Super, super knowledgeable. He's a study abroad student, I believe, even as we speak right now. And he is putting up awesome information on hostels, scholarship information. You know, it's not just his own personal experience. He's putting up real-time, accurate information for college students to look into to go abroad.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I that was my next question, actually. Any blogs or forums or resources? We'll definitely link up all the scholarships you mentioned, as well as the studyabroadblog.com with Nate. That sounds like a cool resource because it's a person doing it. It's not someone telling you how to do it. It's like, no, this is actually what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, exactly. So he's a great guy to follow. I've never met him personally, but what he puts up is solid information for college students to follow.
Really, really cool. And then as a traveler yourself, I know that you've picked up some tips and tricks for saving money while traveling, and I'm sure your students are pretty adept at that as well. As we all know, college students always scrimping and saving. Can you share some of the favorite tips you have for saving money when you travel, especially if it relates to college students? Because, you know, again, we're trying to do it so that they don't come back in debt or anything like that.
Right. Well, for college students, one of the most important things you want to ask your office before you go is if you can get an International Student Identification Card, ISIC card. And what that does is it gives you travel insurance. I believe it's like $20 or something like that. It's super cheap. And it gives you traveler's insurance to cover you if you get sick or something like that. And also you get discounts at pubs and different sporting events, wherever you're at. It's widely used in Europe. You just show your card that you're a university student on a study abroad program, and they cut you like 20 to 25% discounts on whatever you're purchasing. So that's one that I highly recommend. For me personally, I always recommend to students to get the Chase Sapphire Preferred Card. I use that card while I travel. No international transaction fees, double the travel points. I tell students, you know, hey, if you're going to travel, you're going to be using trains, the Eurorail, use this card because you're going to get double the travel points. And me and my wife, we use it all the time.
Yeah, well, and that's number one on my top deal. So I'm with you right there, man.
And then the cost savings comes with making friends. So like I said, I've made so many lifelong friends, and my wife and I have stayed at friends' houses in other countries and not paid a dime. They're hospitable. They let you stay. And then, you know, so you get that perk, and then you always give the return back, you know, invite them over to your place, stay for free. So being able to make friends will live on forever and cost savings for you when you're considering traveling abroad.
Yeah, I 100% love that tip, because you're not only saving money, you're A, getting to visit people that you like, and B, then you're also getting a more authentic experience. If they live in that country, you don't even have to do any research. You show up, you're like, hey, take me to the best place for this, 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 and this. Boom, there's your vacation.
Exactly. Yeah. So there are so many blogs out there that offer good advice, like the Extra Pack of Peanuts blog on traveling. That's where I kind of got started. You know, check out the blogs out there. There are people that are traveling all the time that have good information, that stay away from, you know, the corporate places because they just want your money. There's so many tricks out there to save money while traveling. And all you got to do is just get on some of these blogs. The information's out there.
Yeah, I totally agree. Lastly, what are a few places, because we got to ask you some of the cool things you've done here. What are a few places you've really loved and would recommend for people out there listening to go to, places you've had awesome experiences? And then where are you planning to head to next, or where do you want to head to next?
Sure. Well, I know that I'll be heading to probably China here around July, August for work again. The university sending me over there to start up some new partnerships. So I know my next trip is probably going to be China. That'll be my second time going to China. Places that I've been that I really like, Brazil. Man, that place is awesome. Love the culture, the slow lifestyle, the people. If you ever get a chance to hit up Rio or Sao Paulo, definitely do that. That's one of my favorite countries to go to. I think you're even going there to the World Cup, right?
Yeah, I'll be going down there in the middle of June and middle of July. So I'll have to be hitting you up for tips off the show here.
Yeah, great place. I did some infrastructure work down in Nicaragua, which is like the second poorest country in Central America. So that's another aspect if you're interested in getting into like work study or whatever it may be, spring break trips through your university that are building infrastructure in poor countries. Definitely did that. That was a cool experience. Favorite country by far is Spain. I'm a little biased to it. Love any it really any country that borders the Mediterranean. I love the Mediterranean Ocean. And then, you know, if you're really looking for a unique experience, something that's going to, I think, challenge you and really open you up as a person, is China, going to Asia. That is totally going to flip your world upside down. Great people. You know, sometimes when you go to Western Europe, you're not necessarily challenging yourself culturally, because they're pretty westernized. So I really love going to Asia, for sure. That's a great place to go.
Yeah, and I can't agree more. You know, the idea for me going to Japan was, like you said, to flip my world upside down, and it certainly did that. And every time I go back to Asia, I'm reminded of how much I love it, because it is just so different from what we're used to. Not only do people look different, obviously, and you kind of have that feeling, but it's the idea that their culture is so much different than what we're used to. I would echo your sentiments on that, for sure.
Awesome, man.
Ryan, thanks so much for coming on the show. This has truly been an eye-opening podcast for me. I want to go back to college, man. I want to do a study abroad here. And I know that there are a ton of people listening, both people wanting to break into the travel industry or get a career in travel, and then students looking to study abroad, who have been blown away by the information you've provided. It's been incredible. If people do want more information, is there a way that they can contact you, get in touch with you?
Absolutely. They can email me at Warner, W-A-R-N-E-R, 68. At marshall.edu for education. Shoot me an email anytime. I answer my email consistently on the hour. So if you shoot me an email, I'll get back to you pretty quick. And yeah, I would love to give you some tips if you're a college student and you're wanting, you know, maybe some more specific information beyond what I've said today. I'm more than willing to help. Also on our Twitter site, MU Study Abroad. You can follow us there, and we're always putting up tips and tricks on where to study abroad and putting up stuff from NAFSA, like I was saying, scholarship information. So follow us on there, and yeah, just get a hold of me. Love to talk.
Awesome. Awesome. And we will, of course, be linking up all the stuff. Ryan gave us a wealth of websites and information there. We'll be linking that all in the show notes. So if you're listening to this podcast while you're driving or you know, doing something else, make sure you then eventually get online, go to the show notes, because all that will be linked up, take you to all those grants and everything that Ryan talked about. Ryan, thanks again for coming on, and go Herd.
Well, thanks for having me. Take care.
Cheers. Wow, listeners, Ryan just rocked it and gave us gobs of information and tons of websites to visit. So if you're listening to this on your phone or iPad and you're not around a computer, make sure to head over to extrapackofpeanuts.com. Check out the show notes. So we'll have everything linked up for you there. You won't have to remember all those crazy acronyms and websites that he gave you. You can do that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com, click on the podcast tab, and that'll bring you to Ryan's episode. Also, we're trying to get 100 ratings on iTunes, and we're almost there. We're about 10 short. So whether this is the first one you've listened to or whether you've been listening for a while now, I'd love if you hopped on over to iTunes and left us a rating. It's much appreciated. You guys rock. Don't forget, I have just opened up registration for Frequent Flyer Bootcamp, which only comes around a couple of times a year and is your key to learning how to maximize your frequent flyer miles. You'll get 15 high-def videos. You'll get access to live question and answer sessions with me each week to ask any question you may have. And you're going to become a member of our private Bootcampers Only Facebook group. The best part, I'll work with you one-on-one to help teach you how to book tickets to wherever your specific dream destination is. So instead of just teaching you theory, we'll actually go through step-by-step how to book you the tickets you want, whether that's Australia to scuba dive the Great Barrier Reef, Italy to sip wine in Tuscany, Bali to lounge around on the beaches, or wherever it is that you want to go. I don't want anyone who is interested to get left out, but registration is only open for 4 days, and the class is capped at 30 people on purpose to keep it small group. So if you're interested, head over immediately to extrapackofpeanuts.com/frequent flyer bootcamp. Look forward to whipping you into shape. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us for another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast and making us one of the top-rated travel podcasts on iTunes. Until next week, happy free travels.